XM Radio.
More winning is ready for you in September at Remington Park. Racing begins at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Make your plans now for Oklahoma Derby Day. Sunday, September 29th features the Oklahoma Derby, the Hat and Tie Style Contest for big cash prizes, and the Derby Day Wine Tasting Festival. Oklahoma Derby Day begins at 3 p.m. on September 29th. Visit RemingtonPark.com for group rates, suite rentals, and more. Get more winning excitement in the Remington Park Casino, where the jackpot action never ends. Parking and admission are free at Remington Park.
We're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
On. How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapeta training track, GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Fans, our live meet here at Santa Anita Park will return on Friday, September 27th, and the first ever California Crown Day at Santa Anita will be held on Saturday, September 28th. It is a day that will include the $1 million California Crown Stakes, along with two Grade 2 stakes worth $750,000 each. It will also include premium compound experiences with incredible food and beverage options, along with world-class live musical performances, interactive experiences, and cutting-edge technology. Griffin, Little Yachty, and Shaboozy are just some of the live acts that will be performing. You can get tickets at californiacrown.com. For additional information regarding our autumn meet, go to santanita.com. California Crown Day, Saturday, September 28th, will be an unforgettable day of world-class racing and world-class entertainment that you will not want to miss here at the great race place, Santa Anita Park.
SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back and a little bit into the second half. Yeah, about 15 in. Going to be joined by Kevin and together. Together. The And I'm just trying. There we go. There's the. I knew that the morning lines were out, and there it is. Beautiful. I wanted to get the Churchill action in today because between New York and California tomorrow, we'll have a full docket. And I'm sure James will also pitch in. Have obviously a lot to look at. And the ACAC and the Lucas are the two stakes, but there's plenty of other intrigue. The late action, the late pick five starts with a 2-year-old group, a full field, and it's a nice sequence. It's going to be you're going to have to really pick your spots. It would appear for the weekend, Saturday in particular. There's a lot to consider. Kevin,
good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm all right. Trying to get out ahead of this. You know?
It's always good to get out ahead of it, right?
Well, it just because I can sense that between the card at Santa Anita and New York as well. I'll be at Aqueduct. We'll do the show from Aqueduct tomorrow, and then you also got don't forget you got Remington on Sunday. It's Oklahoma Derby Day at Remington on Sunday, so we got that to do as well, and they'll draw the Sunday card as well at Santa Anita with the sprint and the Zenyatta. I think Caitlin is with us as well.
I am.
Good morning. I'm sorry I missed you on last week on Friday.
You're fine.
No, I looked up and I realized it got to be 11:30 and you had TV to do.
It happened. I forgive you.
Steve, you know what happened? I walked into the paddock for the first race. I've never seen Caitlin more mad than she was. I can't believe
I was
Steve
throwing
didn't call
things.
Well, it doesn't happen too often, but I realized the minute we started a call for you, and I said, "Oh, she's on the air." So. That's another reason I wanted to get out ahead of it today.
Well, we're not going to be on air for another 6 hours, so.
All right, yeah, because it's a Thursday. It's the late card today, and yesterday I've been saving this from yesterday. You had a nice maiden group under the 50,000 and under Nacho Correas and Tom Drury in a. And a nail biter that came in the fifth, and Count the Brave, the Spitester Colt, ended up getting the knob. Mr. Wireless came through for Brett Calhoun, and I've been a fan of his. It's unbelievable. He's now six, and Randy Morse, always happy when Randy wins. Blue Squall in that quasi-featured eighth, and Pancake House. For those of you that are big fans, KK, when you go to Oaklawn, are you a Pancake House guy?
I mean, I've never been to Pancake House. I've driven by there, and the couple of times I've driven by there, it was packed to the gills, so I just ended up going to the track kitchen at Oaklawn, I think, every morning for breakfast.
Oaklawn Track Kitchen has a big reputation. I will make a push. Dave Hill will be on later, and we'll get the official Hot Springs native breakfast, but the best cafe off of downtown. Pancake House. Jay Privman's going to get upset. He's like the biggest Pancake House guy there is. But I usually end up at Best Cafe. So
that horse swept the pool last night.
Is that right?
Yes, the pick six went down to the tune of 300,000 plus to one player. There was one horse live in the pool, and it was Pancake House. And a couple people upstairs had that seven. So that was interesting.
Curlin's, yeah, the Curlin, that was the Marianne Shearer favorite,
gesture, I think was what yeah. it was. Curlin's
gesture.
I was going to say Curlin's approval or Curlin's something, but
Curlin's gesture. Well, 26-1, Martin Schwann for Jordan Blair and Royal Steed Racing, the 5-year-old.
Huh. And Jordan Blair, you know, he was playing Monday morning quarterback. I just ran into him and I said, Jordan, how's it feel? You had someone take down the entire Derby City 6 pool. And he said, you know what? I think the blinkers off of this horse definitely helped. He said he ran a solid figure last night and definitely needed the blinkers off to see those charges coming to his inside and outside down the lane. And, yeah, you know, the Derby City 6 got hit last night, but we still have 4 days of racing left. And, of course, Sunday was closing day here, Steve. It'll be a mandatory payout in all the wagers. So it'll have a couple of days to build up, and we'll force it out on Sunday for closing day of the September game.
Well, even the Pick 5, paid $17,700.
I'm just looking for one of those scores. That's all we need, right, as horse players. We're just hoping. I mean, even a four-figure, even a three-figure score these days. I've been ice cold. I just need something.
Well, this $325,692, do we know, is there any other info? Do we know where it came from?
It was a $230 ticket, and it was placed on the ADW. That was not TwinSpire, so I don't know which one it was, but I do know the ticket was a moderate $230 ticket. So turn that into $325,000. If my math is correct, I think you just under the threshold, so Uncle Sam does not get a cut off the top.
How about that?
That's the way to do it.
Jeez, that's amazing, actually. I'll do the magic of some quick calculation. 325, 692 divided by 230. Yeah.
It's great. Great way to do it. And, you know, congratulations to that player. And, you know, that's a life-changing score for many people.
You think that guy went into work today if it was a man and if he is still working?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
instead of 200 to, yeah, 141. 140, the multiple was 141 to 1.
First thing I would do is I would buy Philly's playoff tickets for the first week in October. That's the first thing I would do, but I did not hit that, and I will not be buying Philly's first round playoff tickets.
Well, if given the option, I wouldn't be able to buy anything for Cincinnati sports. So, just regular seats for the regular season.
Easy. Don't the Bungles will right the ship. Not to worry.
They're running out of time.
You might be right, actually.
They've dug a hole.
Weren't you? You know, did you grow up in Cincinnati?
Near Cincinnati, yes.
We've discussed this. I forget where.
Chillicothe is where it is.
That's right.
Yeah, 40 or so minutes, so it's not too far. But, I mean, I was in Cincinnati all the time growing up and a diehard Cincinnati sports fan my entire life. And it's been something, a lifetime sufferer of those organizations.
Well, I lived in Cincinnati through what we affectionately called the Vern Rapp years at Riverfront. I've not been to the new ballpark, which we've got to rectify that. I couldn't get Marty McGee to boost Marty to come up. In fact, the Phils were in town. KK, we talked about that, about going up to the Natty for a game.
It's a fun place to watch a game. You can. I love to be able to go to Skyline on the concourse and be able to have a couple of cheese conies while I'm watching the Red Legs play, and that's one of my favorite parts about their stadium up there.
It's a very underrated stadium.
We're gonna get there at some point. I always take a picture as we drive by, and as somebody who enjoyed the real old left-hander, Nuxy, Joe Nuxall, WLW, the big one. The old left-hander rounding third and heading for home. Let's talk about the card and the two stakes, and of course the ACAC and the Lucas Classic guys. They both have been pretty impactful toward Breeders' Cup. And let's start with the Lucas. Start with Lukey, where Hit Show is going to lead the way in. And I had Kenny McPeak the other morning, of course, talking about Torpedo. He was all gung ho on Rattle and Roll coming into this. Caitlin.
I'm actually really surprised. I wasn't really knowing what was going on with Rattle and Roll. He had a busy season last year, had a very good start to the season all the way through the summer up until the fall. It kind of tailed off a little bit, so I was surprised to kind of see him back in this race. And I mean, this is a division, especially with the older horses, that I think is just kind of wide open at this point. So he could be a nice addition once again, coming in with the older type of horses. So he I think is kind of the forgotten horse in this race. Hit Show is the one to beat, but I don't think he's unbeatable. Disarm with the blinkers coming back off, I do think is interesting, but I think there's a lot of horses in this race that things are very circumstantial for. So we'll have to see how the pace shapes up. But it is Hit Show's race to lose, I think.
KK.
You know, this field is very interesting because Hit Show is one of three horses on the Saturday card who is owned by Wathmon Racing, who I think is trying to make a big stand in the global racing ownership crew.
I didn't even know they bought Hit Show. That's news to me.
Yeah, he was a private purchase after he won the West Virginia Governor's Cup in early August. Off of Gary Mary West, along with Bob Tumbarumba and Cagliostro, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes. And so he's very interesting. I saw him school in the paddock just a few minutes ago. He was one of those three-year-olds training for the Derby last year that I just thought needed some more time to mature a little bit. He has the Tappet on the bottom side. He's by Candy Ride, but Tappet on the bottom side. I think that time off after the Oklahoma Derby last year did him well. He came back at Churchill. It was very impressive, breaking his maiden, sort of trying to figure out what was next for him. And he ended up going to the Cornhusker, which was probably an easier spot than jumping maybe to the Stephen Foster, which he was nominated for at Churchill. And he didn't run well that day, but he came back and ran a really gutsy effort in that West Virginia Governor's Cup. I've liked what I've seen of him in the morning's training. And, you know, there's not much time left before the Breeders' Cup Classic. And so, you know, I would expect a good effort. Maybe would get him out to Del Mar for the Breeders' Cup. And Rattle and Roll, too, is just a wild card in this race. I'm excited to see him back in action for Kenny McPeak. And so we'll have to see if he's back into form. But it's a solid race, you know, top to bottom. Disarm is in here. He sort of needs to prove it to me. He's won when he's taken the blinkers off. He'll take the blinkers off again in this start. But he's one of those from a gambler. He's 3-1 on the morning line. He just sort of needs to prove it to me that he's the Disarm that we saw in his three-year-old year when he was hurrying up to make the Kentucky Derby. I trust everything Steve Asmussen does, but you just never know what he's done recently, if he's going to be the Disarm of his old or if he's going to sort of show that same regression that he's shown in those last three starts against some better competition in grade one competition. But it's an interesting field. Race 10, the Lucas Classic. Stay up late, Steve. 10:40 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night.
Well, I got to make a point about the pace, because other than Cook Creek, you know, this was a claim. This is a classic maker, you know, flying P scenario. They claim a horse for 40, and then he proceeds to win a pair of allowances, pay for himself a couple of times over. He's seemingly right. Where else is there any speed in this?
There is no speed. Besides,
yeah, there's not.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I can't even try and pretend like there could be someone else that could show that early tactical footing. Warrior Johnny on the outside does have shown speed way back in the past, but he's done his best running sort of just off the pace, and so I could see him tracking in that first play with Jose Ortiz. But, you know, getting Louis Thiaz on Cook Creek, we know what Louis likes to do, and he rides some of his best races on the front end. So I can see Cook Creek, you know, maybe shocking things because there isn't a lot of pace. We saw Hit Show was well out of it in the West Virginia Governor's Cup, and he was seven lengths off that, you know, torrid early pace there when they went 23:46. They're going to go at least 2 seconds slower, I see, in this race.
Well, I'll tell you that I'm looking at Thoroughgraph, and the race two back by Cook Creek absolutely fits in here. And if he runs back to that, they're going to have to come catch him. This is a dangerous horse, and the way Saez, I happen to love Louis Saez on a speed like this. He'll take him into the turn for home and spurt away and make everybody panic. And I'm just looking 5-1. That's a decent enough price. I Cook Creek is very dangerous.
And you'll probably get every bit of that price, too, because people will sort of trend towards the names of Rattle and Roll and Disarm and Hit Show, of course. So you'll probably get every bit of that 5-1.
Let's jump back to the 8th, and this is the ACK. It's going to go the classic one-turn mile. Saudi Crown returns in this spot, and all eyes on him. The Cowboy Jones was his return to North American action after the try in the Godolphin Mile. And, of course, he mixed it up with Senior Buscador and Ushba Tesoro in the Saudi Cup before that. Gets the outside draw, the open-air outside box where the air is fresh and clear. The Marty McGee, there is more pace in here, Caitlin.
There is more pace in this race, and that's going to prove a problem for a horse like Saudi Crown. But I do like that he kind of drew outside, obviously, with post number 7 from some of that other pace. I don't think it's cut and dry with Saudi Crown. The horse that I thought was going to be the biggest threat to him was Mufasa. Mufasa's going to run in the Vosburgh, I believe. So he's not going to come.
Good.
So I think that makes Saudi Crown's job a lot easier. I'm actually really surprised, not totally surprised, because of how much respect I have for Brad and his operation, just how good this horse bounced back in the Cowboy Jones when he came back, because he ran good in the Godolphin Mile. Not quite maybe what we thought he was going to do, but I just thought he ran an absolute blinder in the Saudi Cup, and it probably took a lot out of him. So I think he's probably going to be peaking coming into this race. But, I mean, Tumbarumba and Kyostro are going to be two tough customers in here, and Stage Raider, if he comes back with a Stage Raider of old, I think also for the other three could be dangerous in here.
KK.
It's a fun race. Yeah, it's a fun race, Steve. You know, going going this one-turn mile, I always want to be on the outside going out of that chute, and I think that's why Saudi Crown has sort of all the advantage breaking from the outside. I love Tumbarumba. He's such a cool horse. I mean, he just guts it out every single time, and he has just been so unlucky in, you know, the last several of his starts, and I'm really excited to see him in this race because I do think that he's going to go from the inside with Louis up, and you know, that's why Floron, I think, has an advantage because he can see how fast they go to his inside. But I think Tumbarumba could be a little bit of a play in here because he just runs his race all the time. He's just been a little bit unlucky. For, you know, a Louisiana bred that's been here in Kentucky for Brian Lynch, I mean, he just shows all of his guts and all of his heart every single time, and the price will be right. But it's a really fun race. I would have loved to see Mufasa in here for Nacho Correas, but you know, he's already unloaded up in New York, and he's going to run up there, which is a bummer because I thought he would have added a lot of intrigue to this race. But so be it, and we'll take Tumbarumba and see if we can get somewhat of that morning line price on him.
Well, and Caitlin, you mentioned Stage Raider. We learned a lot over the summer from Cherie about Stage Raider, a very difficult type of a character who trains, you know, when he wants and kind of runs when he wants, and there's not a lot of control over, you know, what you're gonna get from him. This is a real mercurial horse, but the talent, there's no doubt. I mean, being a Justify's brother, you know, John Gunther would love to you know, enhance that resume. He's, you know, he came, well, he almost won this last year, right? Yeah, last year he was second to Zozos in this.
He's what we call an enigma horse. He just shows up when he wants, does what he wants. And I think it kind of really came to light, Cherie talking about, you know, how kind of difficult this horse can be training-wise, racing-wise, all that, when he went out to the Breeders' Cup last year. And Brian Hernandez kind of said a lot of the same things, just the way he handled the task of traveling to the Breeders' Cup, running in the Breeders' Cup dirt mile. So we'll see what he ends up doing in this race, but I know how capable this horse is. And, I mean, the price, if he's anywhere close to that 15-1, it just might be too alluring.
That's the ACK-ACK, the two stakes, the ACK-ACK for toward the Breeders' Cup Mile, the Lucas toward the Classic, and I wish there was a little bit more pace in here so that Pessin and Happy American could put in a run. We're always rooting for Neil. A couple of spots we should touch on, too. There's two maidens on the card. They split a two-year-old set, the fourth and the seventh, and it kind of jumped out at me. Speaking of Cherie, there was the Bobby Flay bred Belladonna Purchase Vermelho, who is a half to Gerrymander and Lone Rock. Don't know if that means anything going six furlongs in the debut, you know, a lot going on there. Asmussen on the outside, Raven's Dream comes back with a second start, and then there's some other fancy pedigrees. Mott has got the Judmon Homebred, Atlal. Asmussen's got a Whisper Hill, Mandy Pope Homebred by Not This Time, Mischievous Time. There's all kinds of things going on. What about the pedigree work, Caitlin Free?
Well, I've looked at both the fourth race as well as the seventh race, and based on kind of the steam type of stuff, I think the seventh race is going to be a little bit more top-heavy. That actually, I think it's going to be a fantastic race and be one of the more important main special races that we've run here so far. A top at law, I think, for Judmont is definitely going to be the interesting one because, I mean, it's just this family that everyone keeps going back to. This is the daughter of Closed Hatches. And, I mean, we've seen what Scylla has done this year. We saw Batten Down last week. So all these Judmont horses from this family, Idiomatics from this family as well, I'm definitely paying attention to them. And Bill Mott sending this one here, I definitely, you know, find interesting. So at law, I think, is definitely going to be a major player in this race. And Vermelho, I'm with you. On Cherie DeVoe, a lot of times I definitely want to see how the Cherie's run first time out because the jump from first time start to second time start is huge for whole horses. So if they usually run well first time out or even win on debut, you know that they've got just some real raw ability.
KK.
You know, I think these races both from a gambling standpoint are difficult, right? Because you know, pedigrees, you know, you're mentioning of all these horses and their families that, you know, relish going the two turns, but, you know, going three quarters of a mile is a totally different game than going, you know, two turns. So I think both of these races have a lot of potential for down the road. Gambling-wise perspective, I'm sort of spreading in each of these races because I can see, you know, some of these horses running okay, and then them either coming back, you know, for a two-turn maiden special weight here to open up the fall meet on the last Sunday in October or even make the Keeneland meet and run there. So, you know, from just gambling-wise, I'm spreading in each of these races because I think it's very difficult, you know, for some of these horses to maybe win this sharp of a distance first out when they want to go two turns down the road.
How about, KK, how about the seventh?
It's sort of the same thing. It's you know, the way I'm playing these cards, this late sequence on Saturday, is, you know, keying in on Tumba Rumba in the eighth race, which 11 races on the Saturday card, so you can do the math for your, you know, pick six, pick five, pick four, and I'm just keying him as my lone A and then trying to, you know, single around as a Lucas Classic. I'm using Cook Creek. I'm going to use Hit Show, and those are going to be my two main A's. And so I'm going to narrow in both of those races, spread in the races around them, and then hope I can get a price for this thing to pay pretty well for the late sequence, because I think those races are sort of question marks around them and could have a price in any of those races surrounding the two stakes on Saturday night.
Caitlin, you got anything clever in that seventh?
No, I just kind of, like I mentioned earlier, there's been some horses that I've heard some talk about around the track. Swalu for the Phil Bauer Barn is definitely one of those. I've heard some things from Neil Pessin about Cornhusker Chris, and I know Norm Cassie also likes Captain Cook. Castle Run for Cherie DeVoe is also very intriguing. So there's so many horses in that race. I think maybe even more so than the fourth race, that there could be some really talented horses in here. But I'm with KK. Like, there's so many first-time starters in these races, just so many different variables. There's horses that are going to maybe want to go two turns and may just kind of need the start before coming into maybe their own a little bit later on in the fall. So these are going to be grab bag type of races, but I think they're going to be important races.
DJ Stable has got a Tis the Law colt, Grim Reaper, making a second start. Debuted at Monmouth in July and happens to be a half to Bet She Wins, was a stake horse. And I also saw that it was it Cherie that had the half to Super Hoity Toity? Mrs. Weber's...
What a name.
There happened to be a couple of somewhere in here was a super hoity-toity half, and that it was Pessin. It's the Pessin. Cornhusker Chris is a half. The Uncle Mo, multiple four-time stake winner, super hoity-toity, albeit going longer on the turf, but nice horse. Cornhusker Chris. If Pessin's talking up a firster, then there must be something there, because that's not necessarily his MO. Although he's got I tell you what, Pessin's got almost a $2, almost an even ROI with his firsters.
They're possible.
Interestingly. Yeah.
They're absolutely possible.
There you go. The rest of the card, there's a good third level allowance sprint, not a big field. Some familiar horses like Gulfport, who has been sort of out of sight, out of mind, has run only once since April of last year, but he did win. So it's good to get Gulfport. Hopefully the Asmussen team and the Highland Brats could keep that one going. And, Moquette, Osborne is now a five-year-old, and he showed so much promise as a young horse. Rusty has got Sweet Cherry Pie for the BBN people, and Greg Foley's got Champlin in here as well, another horse that is coming off of a layoff line, and a horse that flashed real ability early in the year down at Fairgrounds.
Champlin was actually, he was locked and loaded one afternoon here in the spring meet at Churchill, and he was scratched in the paddock because he ended up kicking the paddock railing, and so he was scratched by the state vet, and I just watched him school in the paddock a few minutes ago, Steve. He looks like he's filled out. He just looks like he's, just ready to go. He had two handlers on him. He looks like he is full of himself, so I'm really excited to see him. And the Greg Foley Barn tomorrow at Churchill Downs will have Bango trying to get the sole record for the all-time winningest horse of Churchill Downs history. He goes for win number 12 here beneath the Twin Spires. He's worked like he's, maybe back to form that he's shown last year and the year prior. He's been, tailing off here in the spring. So hopefully he can be the Bango of old and kickstart a good weekend for the Greg Foley Barn.
Well, it's a big important weekend at Churchill. Keeneland, of course, next as the action continues hot and heavy in the bluegrass from Kentucky Downs to Churchill to Keeneland before coming back around for the November meet. And Caitlin Free, Kevin Kirstein, Horse Racing KK, and Caitlin E. Free, good luck today, tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday.
All right. Well, we are looking forward to it. And sad the September meet is coming to a close, but we'll be back in no time.
Well, I was going to say, where do you go? Have you managed to sign on to yet another? Do you have to go up to Presque Isle for 4 weeks, or can you actually get a few weeks off?
No, I think I get a little bit of time off, and going to still be doing a lot of the expert picks for Twin Spires when it comes to Churchill and Keeneland and all of those things, but I'm going to be doing a lot of it just from home. Probably go back to my parents' house and hang out with the kitties.
I love it. I love it. And KK, you never stop working.
Hey, come on, the action never stops here, but the historic Twin Spires, and I got one for you on Sunday. Remember, it's Force Out Day, Steve, on Sunday? Banking Silver in the finale on Sunday, race number 10. That'll get you some shipping money if you're going down the road to the 859, or if you're going to Chillicothe, Ohio, and Atomic Speedway like Caitlin Free will be going. Banking Silver could be the next big thing from the Dallas Stewart Barn, co-owned by Bellarmine basketball coach Scotty Davenport.
I love it. All right, we'll get Scotty on if he wins.
I love it.
Kevin Kirstein, everybody, Caitlin Free. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve.
Always happy to be on here with you, Steve.
There it is. The weekend at Churchill. And how about that? $300,000 hit last night in the Derby City. We got to go to Dave. Dave Hill is going to join us, and we'll get week four. And I don't know when you joined us this morning, but if you heard us from the open, I talked about that piece about sports gambling in the Atlantic. And after the show, I'll figure out a way to we'll see if we can't get a free access. I didn't have time to do it as we were getting going. But I sent it to Dave, and I'm very anxious to hear from him what his thoughts were, especially because he spent so much time this year writing this piece for Rolling Stone. And he more or less has got his finger on the pulse of the gaming landscape. So he and I have not discussed it, but I'm going to guess that he's got some thoughts. As we wait for Dave, congratulations a second time from yesterday, Dick Powell. First, Dick gives you the Happy Valley score for, 280. And he also gave out on a $6 play on that 2x3x1. He gave out the early pick three at Presque Isle. Just paid a modest amount. It paid basically $25. But it was a $6 ticket, so you could have punched it a bunch of times. And actually, the overlap that was offered by PMO, Pat Morrell, Pat also, he liked Blue Soldier, he liked Son of Liberty. So, and then actually, he also had, it was an easy winner, Azoy, in the fourth, and he just missed. It's funny, there was a potential for Dick's play and the horses in the fourth and fifth that Pimo told you about came within a neck of the pick five, actually, which paid 208. So anyway, good day yesterday for all of our for at least two of our pundits. And you know what I didn't check was actually Seth. I didn't check Seth's Churchill. How did Seth do with Churchill? I'll have to go back and check. Because he gave out the pick three play. It's here somewhere on my desk. I'll figure it out. So if you're a subscriber to our four-star program, oh, wait, we don't do that. There's never any cost associated with the opinions. And pretty decent track record. I think Dave Hill is with us.
Yep, I'm here.
Boy, you sound gung-ho, Dave.
Well, you know, some weeks you're the dog and some weeks you're the fire hydrant, you know.
Well, we'll soften that blow with two other topics before we get going. I don't know if you were listening earlier, but breakfast in Hot Springs came up.
Oh yeah, always a fierce debate.
Well, Pancake House last night, yesterday, closed out a $300,000 pick six score for somebody, and I think there's only one Pancake House that it's named after.
has to be,
right?
Oh, that's nice to hear. Yeah, that's nice to hear. But I know you're not a fan, right? We've had this argument before.
My problem might be that I am not a big pancake guy to begin with, and
sure.
And so you know, if it was omelet,
yeah, neither am I. We're waffle people. We name our dog Waffles. We eat waffles every Sunday at our house. So I'm not a pancake person either. But I do like that place. I mean, it's been there forever, and it's the Comptons of Hot Springs. I feel like, and
I love that. So, you know what I get? When I go there, I'll get a cup of coffee, and I'll get the cinnamon coffee cake.
Yeah, and, you know, the savory stuff's not bad, you know. They do a good poached egg. They do good ham steak. You know, it's a real country-type breakfast there, pancakes notwithstanding.
Well, then I put in the vote for Best Cafe.
Best Cafe is great. You know, they're newcomers, and it's a nice place, and they do good food there. There's also a place out farther out, Fountain Lake, called Two Pines that I like a lot. They make good biscuits out there.
Two Pines?
Yeah. It's just a little family-owned cafe. It's a little bit out of town, but it's a good breakfast. Check it out if you're in Hot Springs.
Two Pines. All right. I'm adding. Lake Hamilton address?
Fountain Lake, out towards Fountain Lake.
Fountain Lake?
Yeah, you got to go the other direction. Kind of like you're going towards the village.
Okay,
and
all right.
It's still even open, you know. I don't get home often enough anymore to even know what's still open and what's not. And unfortunately, post-COVID, places have been closing down.
Yeah.
So nope. I could be giving out some bad picks here.
I will work on that, but I knew that this would trigger a response. And then the other topic that I didn't get a chance to discuss it yesterday, Dave, but I sent you that piece from The Atlantic. Really,
you, my editor, everybody's been sending
Oh, really? Piece. Really? Okay. All right.
Because I have this piece coming out in December issue, you know, in Rolling Stone, and I've been reporting it all year, so it's interesting to see this stuff coming up out now. You know, the thing in The Atlantic was, it's really an op-ed by a guy from the Manhattan Institute, which is this think tank, policy think tank, and, you know, the studies that the piece talks about, and for folks who don't know what we're talking about, The Atlantic ran an article called, I think it was called, you know, Sports Betting Was a Huge Mistake, or something like that.
Yes, so, legalizing sports gambling was a huge mistake.
Right, it was a huge mistake. And there's a couple studies that he talks about it, and one of them is the study that's been reported on already that I think is a little bit goofy, that says that that people that are betting on sports are putting less money into the stock market. And, you know, this is one of those things that I think you see a lot of in social sciences where you really have to wonder if it's what's causation and what's correlation, because, you know, something like gambling is always going to be more attractive among people with less money who probably weren't putting money in the stock market to begin with. You know what I mean? So how much of that is really causation? And I don't know. I frankly feel like telling people they should be gambling on stocks instead of gambling on sports is absurd. But the other two studies that they talk about, I think, have some real import. And, you know, he talks about problem gambling being on the rise. It definitely is, and it's definitely on the rise among young men in America. And I can't imagine that you could argue that sports betting's spread is not related to that. So I think those two other studies are pretty valuable. The third study was about domestic violence. And, you know, I'm not sure. That's another one of these correlation causation type questions that I have. But, you know, we see these same types of studies about domestic violence with regard to the Super Bowl and other sporting events. So, you know, but there's a lot of social science around the relationships there between men in sports and domestic violence. But I do think that it's undeniable. I mean, I know that it's a fact that problem gambling is up anywhere from, you know, it could be up as much as 30% post-PASPA in the United States, particularly among young men. So it's an issue, and it's one that I write about in my piece, and it's one that I think the industry bears a lot of responsibility for, because I think that the industry is a little bit predatory. I think it looks to, you know, promote bets and products that are very unbeatable, and they kick out people that win, and they push sucker products on people that will grind people up. But I also think that they really depend on what they call VIP players to stay in business, and they tell themselves those VIPs are all just rich guys that can afford to lose millions of dollars. But the truth is there's got to be a lot of problem gamblers in that pool too, and we're talking 90% of the profits in the regulated sports books come from about 5% of the players.
I thought it was interesting. There was no other. There was not much reference to, you know, anything, any other gambling, including, you know, the only pre-existing legalized gambling, which is our industry in terms of horse racing. There were also two other points I think that were stressed, which was most notably that the tax revenue, the anticipated tax revenue, has not met expectations.
Not even close anywhere except New York. In New York, it's been overwhelming. It's been it's surpassed anybody's expectations. In New York, they've brought in billions, but in other states, it's been a pittance, and that's because in New York, there's a 51% tax rate, and the industry, the major companies, DraftKings and FanDuel, quickly not only agreed to it, proposed it, because they thought if they could get their strategy, it seems, was that if they could get a really absurd tax rate in New York, it would crowd out their competitors, and that they could afford to kind of take a bite on it to dominate this market and get the market share, and that maybe they could get it down later. If that was their strategy, then they're idiots, because taxes don't go down in New York. The line only goes in one direction. And so if that was their plan, now they're out here begging hat in hand now, asking New York to roll it back. It ain't going to happen. But it's also caused problems for them around the state, around the country, where they go into new states, and new states say, we'd love it. You know, we'd love to get what they got in New York. And they say, oh, that deal's not available to you. We're not doing that. So it's been really ridiculous. And it's true that in a lot of states, the revenues have not been there, because this is a tight margin business. You know, sports betting is a lot different than slot machines. In slot machines, you have a guaranteed profit. You basically program it that it's going to return 95% of every dollar gets put into it gets returned in jackpots. In horse racing, you have the takeout, and the rest gets returned to people. In sports betting, you got to bet. You know, if you run a sports book, you're a bookmaker, you gamble against your customers. There's just no other way around it. And these companies don't like that. They don't want to gamble. They don't want these tight margins. They don't want to book. They don't want to have to, you know, book action and constantly manage risk. And, you know, they would rather have a slot machine. And that's what they're all looking to now. I think the pivot we're going to see in this industry is they're going to quickly try to get out of the bookmaking business and get into the slot machine business. And I think that could be far worse than anything that this Manhattan Institute writer at The Atlantic could even dream of.
Wow, and you actually, when we were together, for those that didn't see Dave with Seth Merrow and me on Loose on the Lead this summer, this we actually got into this, and you were, at that point, you were still on that portion of the fact-finding that included a lot of symposium and you know, gaming industry, mm-hmm. you know, get-togethers, and that was a bit of a revelation that these gaming companies want to get into online casino operations, and this just has, I mean, it just has kind of an ominous feel to it, Dave.
It does, and, you know, on so many levels, too, right? Because the other thing that feels ominous is that you talk to the guys who are sort of some of the legends. I mean, look, there's been betting on sports as long as there's been sports, right? I think we've talked about this before. But, I mean, like, the NFL was started by gamblers. The, you know, baseball's popularity grew because of horse racing being shut down. I mean, this is all, these things have always been intertwined. And there's always been betting on sports, even when it was illegal with barroom booking and stuff like that. What's happened is that because it's now exploded and it's being regulated and we have these publicly traded companies moving into this industry, they aren't booking the way that bookmakers who learned this trade over the years, even in Nevada, used to book. And it's been it's something that's really been shocking to folks who have made their living for decades in this industry to see the way that the FanDuels of the world book. And the products that they're selling people and the absolutely, you know, ridiculous juice that's being charged here. And, you know, and the fact that they still can't turn a profit with, you know, some of these same game parlays with like 20, 30, 40%, you know, hold, and they still can't turn a profit. So, you know, I interviewed Roxy Roxborough. He's a legendary bookmaker from, you know, used to be the bookmaker
of
Stardust. Yeah, he's, and Roxy says, you know, America can survive sports, legalized sports betting. They've survived sports betting for forever, so we could survive this. And but we, he's like, I'm not sure we can survive mobile casinos. You know, if everybody has a slot machine in their pocket, I'm not sure that that's something America can survive. And we've got warning signs in Europe and in Australia where this has happened before, where they're telling us don't do this. But this is what these companies want to do, and this is where they think they're going to make their profit. And they're telling these state legislators, "Hey, you didn't get as much as we thought we'd get from sports. But if you let us put these slot machines on their phones, we can get you. We can pay for your roads, your teachers' salaries, your state troopers. We can pay for it all." And that's what we're going to be up against in the next couple of years. So it does feel a little ominous and a little heartbreaking, because if they had just done what we thought they were going to do, which was, you know, if they just let people who wanted to book sports come in and book sports, you know, and make their, you know, 4%, everybody had been fine. Everybody had been happy. But instead, we had to get these multi-billion dollar, you know, hedge funds come in and get these publicly traded companies who, you know, don't want to shear the sheep. They want to skin it, you know. And and I think that's really ruined what could have been something that would have been fine. And, you know, things have to get worse before they can get better, right? And I fear that what that means in this case is a lot of problem gamblers, and it means a lot of, you know, really bad products being offered by sportsbooks along the way. And it might mean some states decide they want to put the toothpaste back in the tube and maybe go back on regulation. I'm not sure that'll happen anywhere, but it might happen. It might happen in some places.
Well, and you then wonder, and one of the reasons I wanted you to riff on this is because you then wonder if we're the baby that gets thrown out with the bathwater. You know, even though we had a cutout, you know, from the origin, you know, from the earliest days of you know, the Interstate Horse Racing Act, and you know, the you know, the fact that we were a pre-existing wagering based enterprise, but if they dial back, I mean, is that a reasonable concern?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I feel like horse racing has been around so long that. And I don't know that people associate these two things, right? I mean, you know, if the issue that I think what I've seen anecdotally from state legislators that I've talked to from around the country, the thing that they're hearing from their constituents is that they're concerned about problem gambling, and they're concerned about the number of advertisements that they have to see and hear, and just how overwhelming that's been. So, you know, that, you know, it's funny that the industry could have probably just, like, dialed it down a bit with their marketing, and they probably wouldn't be dealing with as much of a backlash as they are. But I don't know that horse racing gets sort of linked into all of that stuff. I know that in some states there's been money that's flowed into, you know, the horsemen's coffers because of whatever, like legislation that required sports books to sort of partner up with a track or, you know, some other sort of licensee in order to operate. And I know that's been something that's helped, you know, horsemen in places maybe like New Jersey, but and so, but even those types of fees probably pale in comparison to the amount of handle that these companies have been generated now in places like New Jersey and New York. So who knows? I mean, what I'd be very curious, and I didn't do any reporting on this for my piece, but I'd really like to know more about is how much have tracks seen, or have they seen any increase at all in handle as sort of a residual, you know, to the growth of sports betting in America? You know, has any of this spilled over, and is it measurable at all?
Well, we discussed that as well. Remind everybody, the piece is due in December?
Yeah, it'll be in the December issue, and maybe it'll probably be online earlier than that.
All right. Well, we will, when the time comes, we will delve in. All right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been a fun piece to report and work on, and I learned a lot about what's going on in the industry doing it. Had a lot of fun writing it, and I hope folks enjoy it.
How many words is this thing?
A lot. This is a battle we're currently I'm having with the editor currently, but it's a lot. It's a big one.
The biggest piece you've ever compiled?
It's up there, yeah. It's up there.
Right. All right, I could not resist. I saw that piece.
It
I read it,
book.
And you know, well, I was going to say you could probably or a pamphlet. Nobody, you know, nobody issues pamphlets anymore, do they?
I don't think so. I don't think they do. No.
in the great tradition of Thomas Paine, it's
Thomas Paine, or the tip sheets at the track. You know,
there you go. Well, all right, we've avoided week three recapping enough.
Yeah, it was. Look, so I don't know if you followed it, but Circa Survivor. So you know, my group, we had six entries. We are out, and we are out. We join everybody else. There were 14,000 entries in Circa Survivor. There are now 640. So in 3 weeks, we've lost. Over 90% of the pool. It's crazy. It's really, truly one of the nuttiest things I think anybody's ever seen. So there's about 640 people now competing for $14 million on week four. The whole thing could be over before Thanksgiving. Yeah, it's just last week, I think the top selections were in Survivor were Cincinnati, Cleveland, Vegas, New York Jets, I can't remember who else, but I mean, of the top five, I think four lost outright. The only one that won was the Jets, and the Jets are a Thursday night game, which made it hard for a lot of people. A lot of people, our team included, we wanted the Jets. We decided not to pick them because you'd have to put in your pick on Thursday, and that puts you at a little bit of a disadvantage because you don't know if you put in your pick on Thursday, you have less information about, you know. Just like when we talk on Thursdays, you have a lot less information about who's starting, who's playing for the week on the other teams. So the only people who got through were the people that had the guts to take the Jets on Thursday night.
Amazing.
And, yeah, it just crushed everybody. I won my pool with my friends this week just by luck. There were only 20 of us in it, but everybody was out. So I won it in week three. I mean, in the Circa Millions contest where I'm clinging on to a 8-7 record, so I'm barely holding on to a winning record there. I think that there's one person, I think, that stands atop the field 13-2. Now, that's unusual, too. Usually, 3 weeks in, you've got a lot of folks who are undefeated, who've gone 15-0, and, you know, you have a big clump of them up there. Now we've got one person at 13-2. There's very few people that have, you know, pretty strong records 3 weeks in. A lot of the consensus picks have gone down. It's just an unpredictable season so far. I think a lot of handicappers are perplexed. A lot of power ratings are kind of going haywire, and you know, and on top of the fact that the teams are kind of playing differently than folks saw them playing last season, some of these blowout games are throwing a lot of the data, making it difficult to make sense of the data that gets fed through some of these machines, too. So it's been an interesting 3 weeks, but it creates a lot of value, I think, too, for folks who feel like they've got a good handle on this, on what's happening right now. But, you know, it feels like there's a lot more running than we thought there would be this season, and that has to do with defenses playing a lot more. You know, maybe we're seeing a lot of too high safeties, shells. We're seeing a lot of defenses that are protecting against big explosive plays. So we're seeing a lot more running than we probably did last season, 3 weeks in. And that'll change, too. So it's been wild, but that's part of what makes it fun. And for our part last week, we would have had a winning week if we hit the teaser. You know, the teaser was plus 160. And if we hit the teaser, then we go 3-3, but we hit the plus 160, so it ends up being a profitable week if we hit it. And losing the teaser was really, I mean, I'm okay with losing some of those sides, but losing the teaser was really the bad beat for our week. The Niners game, I don't know if you followed it, but we hit the first two legs, so we're alive to the Niners minus one. And then the Niners are 97% to win. In the fourth quarter.
Yep.
97% to win. And we got a minus one, so we're coasting here, right? And then they fall apart. And the Rams had this incredible comeback, and I just watched it with my head in my hands. I couldn't believe it. So that was my bad beat of the week. I think that really hurt our card, but we would have had a positive outcome if we pull that teaser off, then it makes up for the sides. But, you know, Monday night this week we had two games. We had a doubleheader, and I was able to get even and do well on Monday night. I loved it. I think they should keep doing doubleheaders every Monday. Or really not even a true doubleheader, because they were kind of going on at the same time. They're just a little bit staggered, and I liked that.
Hey, we got one. We've got one this weekend again.
Yep.
Jacksonville, Buffalo, excuse me, that was last week. Tennessee, Miami, and Seattle, Detroit. We'll get to this week in a minute. I do want to hit one thing and get a reaction from you, because you did talk about skewed data. There was one of the great, one of the great maxims. It seems in betting the NFL and in observing NFL, which is the desperation factor. The Giants came in 0-2. Indy came in 0-2. Denver 0-2. Carolina, Baltimore, the Rams, Jacksonville, and Cincinnati. The 0-2 teams went 6-2. And doesn't some of the emotional aspect of professional athletes, and particularly this National Football League, doesn't it factor in a way that the data-driven element can't quantify?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and I think that, like, certainly there are people who believe that, like, what we would call qualitative handicapping, that it has some value. And it probably does. I mean, particularly if you do both, right? If you do sort of a quantitative analysis of a matchup and then you kind of apply your own qualitative. The problem that you run into is that your qualitative analysis of the game might take you off of a number that you should have been on, because, you know, the story that you want to tell is just that, just a story, you know. You can't, so to speak, you can't really back test qualitative handicapping. You can't, you know, it's not something that you can, right, you can't build a model for it. It's a little bit more ephemeral, you know, but that's not to say that it has no value at all. Certainly, it's like, you know, there's a there are picks sometimes where the numbers will tell me one thing and I'll look at it and I just can't believe it. And I'm like, well, I just can't even believe it. So, you know, I'd, instead of saying, well, I'll just bet the other side, sometimes I just have the option to not bet a game because I just don't feel right about it. You know what I mean? Even though the numbers may say bet it. But I rarely take money out of my pocket and put money on a game because of my gut or because of some sort of qualitative sort of narrative-based idea that I have about a game. Rarely. Sometimes it'll happen, but not often. Hmm. You know, there has to be some sort of quantitative reason for me to put the money up, too. Like, I want to know that. Like, I want that to strengthen my hunch, so to speak. If that's not there, I'm probably not going to bet it. And this idea that teams a must-win game, I mean, this is the NFL. These are all, there's a lot of parity in the NFL. These are all professionals at the top of their craft, and they all want to win. You know, there's a lot of money on the line for all of these teams. They all want to win. And, yeah, somebody can come in and say, this is a must-win for your team. That doesn't mean the other team is playing any less hard, you know.
Sure.
It doesn't mean that, you know, I mean, tonight the Cowboys have to win, right? That's what everybody's saying. Like, this is a must-win for the Cowboys. Sure, but that doesn't mean that the Giants don't see it as the Giants are walking there saying, like, yeah, we can afford to lose this one. You know, they want to win it, too. I mean, every game is a must-win for every team is how I feel about it. And every matchup is a matchup between, you know, the best football players in the world. So, you know, I don't know. I don't always think that there's now when you get, we talked about this last season, when you get late in the season, there become these weird reverse incentives for teams to tank, for players to, you know, maybe sit when they should be playing, you know, that kind of stuff happens for sure. But right now I think everybody's trying to win and it's early in the season, right? I mean, it's early in the season, and some of these teams who we wrote off pretty early on, in their mind, they think they're going to shock the world, right? And I hope that the Panthers are one of them because I've got some futures on them. And, you know, we bet against them last week, but turned out that jockey change was a big one.
Hmm.
And Andy Dalton looked great, and I think now the Panthers may want to shock the world. And I hope that they do, because I did bet a little bit on them at the beginning of the season to do better than what we've seen. And also individual players, you know, some of these quarterbacks, these second strings, and in some cases third string quarterbacks coming out there, they're going to play their heart out because they're auditioning
sure.
for a job. They want to start. So I think go into every week assuming that everybody is trying to win. That's how I feel about it.
Well, and you know, then there's some scenarios that produce maybe some momentum. Certainly, Washington, you would think, off of that performance, you know, they come away. I think people, you know, reevaluating what they are, right? Off
that's
of that.
A good example. I mean, Washington. So Washington plays Arizona this week. Washington has looked, you know, they've been underdogs that have won outright. Last week they beat the Bengals as big underdogs. I had them on the money line on Monday night and cashed a decent ticket there. The fact is that the Commanders have been putting, I think they've been getting something like 6 or 7 yards per play. So that's an insane number that can't hold. And so the other side of that coin is that sometimes teams benefit from kind of outrageous outlier performances that have to regress to the mean, right? It's just like when you're at the craps table and you have, you know, you're shooting a lot of sevens, like that can't continue forever, you know? It's, but like you're going to, every time you roll the dice, the odds you're going to hit a seven are always going to be the same. They don't change because you're on a streak one way or the other. At some point you regress back to the mean. And I think what Washington's mean is for what their offense can do probably is something better than what we thought it was going to be, but worse than what we saw in the Cincinnati game, you know, and it's somewhere in that middle. I don't believe that Washington can, the numbers they've been putting up offensively are not sustainable, and their defense has just looked pretty bad, which we all knew that it was going to be bad coming into it. So I think Washington is a team where you can make money by fading them because their market, the public is going to be really high on them because of what you're describing, right? This sort of momentum, it feels like they have the wind at their back. They're on a streak, so people are going to back them. And that's a good opportunity to look to fade them often, right? If the numbers don't bear it out. And look, they're 3.5-point underdogs this week to the Cardinals in Arizona. And I think that Arizona should win that game by at least 4 points. It's not enough for me to make a play on it, but it's, I think that the number's probably right. The Commanders should be underdogs to the Cardinals, a team that also has a pretty terrible defense. The Commanders beat the Bengals. If the Bengals were playing the Cardinals this week, the Bengals would be favored, right? So the Bengals are still in market and in power ratings much better than the Commanders, even though they lost to them last week.
Well, and they're on the road, there's the intersection of our last two pieces of conversation point. Cincinnati's at Carolina. And there's Washington getting 3.5, and here's the Bengals giving 4.5. Go ahead, Dave, dive in, and let's go through it.
Sure. I mean, I didn't make a ton of plays this week. I made three, and the numbers have moved, unfortunately. This is why I bet them early, because I felt like the numbers look good and the market's agreeing with me. But I bet the Rams plus three. The Rams today, let's see where they're at now. This morning, where are we sitting at? The Rams are, I can't find them on my screen. I think that they're still around three if they haven't gone to 2.5. There's going to be a battle over this number. I think that there's going to be a fight between the 3 and the 2.5, probably up until kickoff. Yeah, here it is. It's at 3. We're at 3 in the market. So that's a number you can still get. I like the Rams against the Bears here in this spot, getting points. And there's been a lot of market movement on the money's been pretty solid on the Rams at this number. So I like that 3. I got it at plus 109. I think right now the best number I see is minus 106. So it's a pretty fair 3. If you can get it, I wouldn't want to lay too much juice with it. I also bet the Jags plus 7, and this is an interesting game. The Jags just looked terrible. I mean, they just got tore up from the floor up in that game, and they came out of it saying, "Oh, we're a terrible football team." they didn't feel so hot about their performance either. They're getting 7. Or maybe they're not getting 7 now. They might be. This is a game where I think it's been lit up all morning, where there's been a lot of Jags money. Yeah, they're at 6 at Circa. They're at 5.5 now at Pinnacle.
Wow.
You can find a juice 6.5 at some of the regulated books like DraftKings. But if you just want to look offshore this morning, the Jags money's been heavy, and they've moved that number to 5.5. So I'd get a 6.5 now while you can get it if you agree with me on the Jags side here. The Texans, in everybody's power ratings, the Texans are much better than the Jags, but are they 7 points better? Or we could say 8.5, given that, or we should say, are they 7 points better than the Jags at home? I think that they're not, but then I use Massey Peabody power ratings, which weirdly enough had the Jags and the Texans pretty even, as pretty close, even given the Jags' terrible performance. The Jags have been falling, but I think Massey Peabody was pretty high on the Jags early season, and that's part of why they're falling from a higher point than other teams, maybe places probably had them. But the Jags' defense, I think, has really held their numbers up. And their rushing game has held their numbers up too. They've had a pretty decent, they've had some pretty decent numbers out of their running backs, out of Etienne, and I think that they'll get tested here against the Texans. But I like getting 7 points, so I grabbed that number, and I think you should grab a 6.5 if you agree with me, because it's not going to be there for long. And then I went with the Chargers again. They disappointed us last week. I got 8.5 here.
Wow,
this number's already been steamed to 7. There's a lot of news now about Justin Herbert playing. We're going to find out probably today whether or not that's official, but it seems like it will be. And on just the sort of rumors leaking out about him playing, this number's been steamed to 7. So I grabbed it at 8.5, so I feel pretty good about the number that I got. Do I still like it at 7.5? Yes. Do I like it at 7? No. So I would look for seven and a halves if they're out there. The other thing we may see later today, if you wait on this game, is some buyback. So once this number gets to seven, it's seven everywhere in market, and it'll probably stay there. We may see some buyback on the Chiefs that may get you that extra half point, because it's still a play for me at seven and a half. I still think I get that 2-point edge. My numbers show the Chargers losing this game by five, a little bit more than five. So 8.5 felt like a gift, and clearly we see the market agreed with that. So try to get that half point. Try to find that hook on the touchdown if you want to bet the Chargers side with me here. I don't love it at seven. And then I also bet a teaser. So there's some. I still have to come up with some millions picks. I kind of like New Orleans this week against the Falcons. I didn't love the side. They're at 2.5 right now in market.
Yep.
And I didn't love that. So what I did was I decided to use them in a teaser since that's a good Wong number for our teasers. So I found a good teaser. I've got New Orleans plus 8.5. I've got the Jets minus 1.5. And I have the Titans plus 7. And that's a pretty decent edge on that, about a 5 to 6% edge on that three-team teaser. So we'll try again to hit one of those this week.
What was the third? New Orleans plus 8.5?
New Orleans 8.5, the Jets minus 1.5, which I think you can still get, and the Titans plus 7. So the Titans are plus 1 right now against the Dolphins. I mean, the Dolphins have dropped all the way down to last place in pretty much everybody's power rankings this week. And we don't even know who we're going to get at quarterback. It looks like it might be Tyler Huntley, who would be, he's a great quarterback, but they just signed him. You know, he's coming in cold to this team. Even a decent backup like Huntley, I think, has still got a long way to go. So it's a tough week for them and their offense. And so this is a great spot for the Titans if you're getting a touchdown. I'm not playing this game, like I said, on the side at 1.5.
Right.
It feels really tight. But it's like a great teaser leg to tease them up to 7. If you can get 7.5, even better. That's the teaser I'm playing. And who else I'm going to put on my millions ticket, I'm probably going to put New Orleans on there with these three other teams. But those are all dogs. You know, I'm going to keep looking today. The problem with millions picks is that they don't post the lines until Thursday afternoon. So I actually don't know yet what the lines are. So I'm just sort of feeling my way in the dark. They'll be somewhere close to what the circle line is now. So maybe once I make those, I'll share those with you. You can put them on Twitter. But that's where I feel like I'm going with it.
Excellent. All right. As always, spectacular and provocative. Any of the national games Sunday night, Buffalo, Baltimore, 2.5 spread. Tonight, Dallas 5.5, it looks like, giving to the Giants at home.
Yeah, I lean Dallas. I lean Dallas in the game at this number. It was 6 at one point. I think it might have been 6.5. At 6.5, I kind of was looking Giants. But, you know, the number, but as the money comes in and the money's been coming in on the Giants and the number's sort of shrinking, you know, start to lean Dallas. Once we get to, you know, I think that the Giants lose this game by, you know, something like 4.5 points. So it's starting to look like it might be heading in that direction, getting back to a 4.5 or a 4. So I think the market's got it pretty, is getting close to being right here. But I was looking Giants, and if the number gets back out there and the Cowboys take money, I would probably take the Giants at home with 6 points, six and a half. I'm excited about the Ravens-Bills game. It's going to be a really good one. I don't have a bet on the game, but I do think that the Ravens win at home. And I wouldn't want to give up too many points to the Bills. But, you know, I'm still high on the Ravens again this season. You know, it's been frustrating a few start here, honestly. But this will be a big test for them. It'll be a game to watch. But and I'm sure I will bet on it, but I don't have a bet now. I don't have a big position on it. But I cannot imagine that, you know, Sunday night watching the game and not betting on it. So I'll probably have something on the Ravens.
And therein lies the problem.
Yep.
Dave, outstanding. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Good luck, everybody, and talk to you next week.
Dave Hill, 77, everybody. And don't forget, Unabated, use Hill as the code. Get a seven-day trial at Unabated Sports. Thanks to Dave. Thanks to KK and Caitlin. And earlier, Tony Black and Tom Law as well. I'll finish up this pick six sequence at Belmont at Aqueduct. A couple of interesting scratches. Moose Mandy out of the fifth. Otherwise, it's pretty clean. Take the four and the eight out of the seventh, but I don't think that's going to affect anybody's ticket. So I'll finish up, and I'll get it posted, and I will talk to you from the Big A tomorrow morning. Good luck if you're playing, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM Archive Podcast after some post-production work. And I'll talk to you from South Ozone Park in the morning.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.